You're listening to a Semantic podcast powered by PodTech.
Hello, and welcome to the Security Response podcast presentation brought to you by Semantic, the world leader in providing solutions to help individuals, small businesses, and enterprises assure the security, availability, and integrity of their information. Today's podcast is focused on a roundup of the latest Semantic Security Response web logs for September. The goal of this podcast is to help you better understand some of the threats and trends that Semantic's security response engineers are investigating and writing about in their blog entries. Today we'll take a look at several topics, such as Trojan Zoneback, which is a Trojan that utilizes camouflaging techniques to hide itself using the Windows registry. We'll touch on pharmacy-related spam, which continues to haunt our email inboxes. And we'll look at attackers that go after online gamers' accounts that are full of virtual money and stock in order to trade them for real money. And we'll present the last in the series on a municipal Wi-Fi security covering off transmission and device security. In closing, we'll discuss the recent release of the Semantic Internet Security Threat Report Volume 10, and we'll look at some of the troublesome issues surrounding vulnerabilities when all trends and vulnerabilities are considered that everything is vulnerable. In September, Semantic's Han Lau blogged about a recent discovered Trojan named Trojan Zoneback. This Trojan was worthy of mention because of its use of the Windows registry to camouflage its activities. During its installation process, the Trojan can scan the registry run keys to see which applications are already set up and running on the computer, and then makes backups of those keys and replaces them with copies of itself. Once the computer is restarted, all of the applications that were backed up will load as normal. However, so will every instance of a registry key that involves a copy of Trojan Zoneback. Han prefers to call this Trojan the poor man's rootkit because it tries to hide its changes in files from the user but doesn't require any advanced programming techniques. If Trojan Zoneback has infected a machine, the user will have to dig pretty deep into their file system in order to figure out what's gone wrong, but it's unlikely that the user will have any idea anything is wrong in the first place, because most operations will appear to be normal. Also in September, Kelly Connolly reminded us of the continuation of pharmacy-related spam bombarding our inboxes. Pharmacy-related spam usually ranks near the top of the list of spam categories received each month, and September was definitely no different. Most of us with an email account will have seen some form of pharmacy spam, which usually includes non-clickable URLs in the body of the messages. Because they're non-clickable URLs, this requires a recipient to manually cut and paste the URL into a web browser. The websites that pharmacy spam URLs route to can employ any number of schemes, such as adware, spyware, and malicious code exploits. Some of you may be wondering who manually cuts and pastes a suspicious URL into a browser, but most people out there are willing to do that. This flavor of spam continues to be successful as users continue to be tricked into chasing the rogue websites. The URLs involved in spam are usually garbled, cryptic, and carry a short life expectancy, and the malicious websites associated with this pharmacy spam will change address and domain just as often as the URLs. And that's because the spammers are continually making minor adjustments to the URL and website addresses in an attempt to fly under the radar of anti-spam software and technicians. In recent months, Semantic has been following the increase in Trojan horse programs out of the sole purpose of stealing online gaming accounts. Karui Harashi reported on the surge in attacks targeting the player accounts of large online multiplayer games like Lineage and the World of Warcraft. There's an online marketplace called Real Money Trading, or RMT, where online gamers can trade their virtual gaming money or stock items for real money. RMT is run by a third party and is not usually condoned by the official manufacturers of the role-playing games, but has certainly become a large market for these transactions. Reportedly, RMT has traded more than $2 billion U.S. thus far in 2006. Unfortunately, it seems that with each successful online venture, especially when it includes money and lots of it, attacks and malicious code will soon follow. If an attacker successfully gains access to online gaming accounts, the virtual money in stock can quickly be turned into cash using RMT or some other online marketplace. Users should be aware of different methods used to install Trojans on computers. There's the practice of placing bogus links on a website, which then links to Trojan programs lying in wait on another website or bulletin board system. There's also the more high-tech practice of inserting exploit code directly onto vulnerable websites, which can then be downloaded onto a machine running a vulnerable web browser. File infectors are also used to distribute Trojans, most likely because they're slower to propagate than worms, which means they'll be less conspicuous. File infectors are also difficult to detect and remove due to their constantly changing file names and MD5 checksums. Keylogger programs could also steal the required information for a gaming account, among other personal details. Karu speculates that online gaming vendors may have to take a page out of the Real Money Online Banking Security Handbook very soon. In September, Brian Hernacki continued his walkthrough of municipal Wi-Fi awareness, covering transmission, security, and device security in Part 4, the last of the blog series. Transmission security, as a phrase, describes all data that is sent over a wireless network after you've connected and been authenticated on the network. We need to remember that because Wi-Fi is a broadcast radio signal, anyone can receive it, and anyone who wants to can have a look at what you're sending and/or receiving while using that signal. In order to stop people from doing just that, we need to incorporate some sort of wireless encryption, and there are two ways of doing this. You can either use one of the Wi-Fi encryption technologies, such as WEP or WPA, or we can use a virtual private network or VPN. Brian recommends the VPN as the preferred solution as long as the user is comfortable and knowledgeable on how to install and configure the VPN client. Brian also covers device security in his blog. Device security is often overlooked, but in terms of municipal Wi-Fi considerations, it should be at the forefront of most users' minds. Don't forget that when we hop onto a municipal wireless network, it is a public network, and anyone else sitting on that network will be able to see our computers. We'll no longer have the comfort of a home or office firewall to protect us, so users need to ensure that they have a firewall and intrusion prevention software installed locally on their computer when using a municipal Wi-Fi. In September, Symantec published the 10th volume of the Symantec Internet Security Threat Report. Dave McKinney posted a blog in regards to the ISTR, and more specifically about the myriad of vulnerabilities that have been reported to Symantec. The first half of 2006 has seen yet another increase in the number of vulnerabilities reported to Symantec, with a little over 2,200 new records added to the database. This is a new high for the most new vulnerabilities in a six-month period. Along with more vulnerabilities, there are more affected vendors than ever before. The rise in vulnerabilities can be attributed to the increase in vendors due to the emergence of Web 2.0 technologies and the available of fuzzing tools, which can make vulnerability research more accessible to attackers. These days, the vulnerability landscape shows that attackers are less noisy and attempt to gain ground by burrowing deeper and trying to remain undetected. With the continued increase in vulnerabilities and associated vendors, attackers bet their time and resources on the fact that somehow, somewhere, there'll be an enterprise using a piece of software that is unpatched and vulnerable to attack. That also means that enterprises are going to have to adjust the roles of their employees who are responsible for vulnerability management. Given the sheer number of vulnerabilities being reported, organizations cannot survive an attack by simply employing reactive vulnerability management because, as Dave puts it, everything is vulnerable. And what he means by that is, we've migrated into the era where vulnerabilities will appear with regularity, and the contingency plans of yesterday have quickly become the regular business practices of today. That concludes our Security Response podcast for today. For the complete text of this month's blog postings, point your browser to www.symantec.com/enterprise/security_response/weblog. Thank you for downloading and listening to the Security Response podcast brought to you by Symantec, the global leader in information integrity, providing software, appliances, and services to help individuals and enterprises secure and manage their most important asset, their information. For more information about this subject, related products, or additional podcasts, make sure to visit www.symantec.com.